Hey guys, Pablo here. Yeah, look, I know it's Saturday. It is your Saturday. Usually it's our Saturday too, an off day at ESPN Daily. But tonight is bringing us like the most insanely anticipated Final Four game and possibly college basketball game period ever between North Carolina and Duke. And so we are bringing you an updated presentation of an episode we ran just a couple weeks ago, just before the last time these two teams played. It is a conversation with the inimitable Wright Thompson, who spent most of his college basketball season basically stalking Mike Krzyzewski as he embarked on his 42nd and final season as Duke's head coach. It's a story that uncovers a lot that I didn't know about Coach K, and it feels only fitting to revisit it as he tries to add a storybook ending to an unparalleled and very hated career. It is Saturday, April 2nd. This is ESPN Daily. Wright Thompson, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, he's been coaching Duke basketball for longer than I have been on this planet. He's been doing it for over four decades at this point, and we all know that we're watching his swan song, his last dance in college basketball right now. But I wanted to start with you at the beginning of this whole farewell tour at Madison Square Garden with Duke taking on Kentucky. And you were there like traveling the tunnels with Coach K. What was that night like?
It's very cool. And Pablo, you've been in Madison Square Garden before, but I always get a buzz in Madison Square Garden.
It is a packed house, and I mean a packed house at Madison Square Garden. And now it is time for Kentucky and Duke. And it is hopping in here right now.
You do feel like you are at the center of something.
Heels. We have seen it time and time again tonight from the freshman.
And so, you know, the game is over. He finishes his post-game press conference.
Dell does that. I think if those two guys would do that more, we'd be better. But he's going to keep getting better. All right, thank you.
It's that fabulous, you know, you've won the first game of the season. You know, you've got the stereo playing loud in the locker room. You know, you can't through the walls make out even really what the song is or what people are saying, but it's just that sort of joyous locker room noise. So Coach K, it's almost like, it's probably 1 a.m, comes out and we're sort of winding through the halls to get to the visitors' locker room. You know, it's, I'm sure you've been back there. It's where that big old freight elevator is.
Yes.
Pat Riley talks about how much he loves the freight elevator. You know, it's old. It sounds old. We ride it down from the fifth floor to the third floor, and then we just follow him sort of through the bowels of Madison Square Garden. And it sounds dumb, but like he knows exactly how to get from the elevator to the loading dock to where his buses are. He knows that he is always going to sit on the right side of the bus on the second row. He knows that he is always going to sit first row, left side of the plane, aisle seat and coach because he puts the team in first class. You know, he knows that the game is going to end at 6. They'll watch film after. He'll probably finish up at midnight. He knows that every time they get on a bus after a game, there's going to be pizza on the bus. Just rhythms to life.
Right, because at this point in time, what Coach K is on the precipice of is discovering what life is like when all of those rhythms finally stop.
You know, I think the people who care about him most are curious, is a kind way to say it, about, you know, what he's going to do when he is no longer Coach K.
Nobody has won more men's college basketball games in Division I than Mike Krzyzewski. And love him or hate him, and many, many of you hate him, he has won 5 national titles, made now 13 Final Fours, the most ever, and he's turned Duke University into one of the most well-known institutions in all of American life. So today, with Coach K on the verge of his final Final Four, Wright Thompson tells us who turned Mike Krzyzewski into Coach K, and how one of the most intense people in all of sports finally became a person who's about to walk away. I'm Pablo Torre. This is ESPN Daily. Ray Thompson, you have profiled the most famous and important figures in sports from Michael Jordan down the line. And this assignment comes in for you to profile Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K, on the verge of his final season. And it is worth noting here that from the outside, Coach K is a terrifying person. He is bristling with like a legendary fury, energy, discipline. And so what's it like to just walk into a room where Coach K is? What is his energy like at this point?
One, I don't think you want to walk into a room with him right after a loss, right? I mean, that's still very, very clear. He's intimidating, but I think he's also aware of his own Coach K-ness and can amplify it or diminish it depending on, you know, what he feels the moment calls for. I found him funny, kind, humble, appreciative, a little dumbstruck now at the end that any of this had happened to him. I think one of the real tests of people, especially who've gotten big like that, is who are their friends? Mm. All of his best friends are the people that he was friends with when he was 5 years old, still. And they're always around. I mean, there are a couple of them who I don't even think probably need tickets to get into Cameron. You know what I mean? Like, their face is their own backstage pass. They just show up. That's always a pretty good tell. Like, have they reinvented themselves or have they brought their old world along with them?
I live in a great neighborhood. People have said it was like a village. We stayed out all the time. Our parents didn't necessarily know where we were at. And it was a great place to grow up and build relationships.
They played Florida State the other night and won. And I mean, I think there were 10 people from Chicago, from the old Polish neighborhood. Those guys are around a lot.
You know, when I think about the mystery of Coach K, right, I think of even just the basic fact of how to even spell his name, Krzyzewski, which sounds very, very, very different than how it looks on paper.
Well, before I went into his office the very first time, I made sure that I knew how to do that. Mm. It's Krzyzewski.
No, I mean, look, it is a Polish last name that, your reporting, like, came to be its own sort of rabbit hole of a story.
Well, you know, so the Krzyzewskis, this whole family lived in a very insular Polish-American neighborhood. You know, they laughed now, he and his friends, that, you know, they thought that everyone in the world was Catholic and spoke Polish. And so, you know, this is very much first-generation immigrant community. So a lot of them changed their name. And for the Krzyzewskis, the English version of that was Cross, because K-R-Z-Y is Cross. And so, you know, Mike's dad's friends called him Bill Cross in the army. He was Bill Cross. When he died, his tombstone said William Cross. And Mike told me this story very early on in our first conversation. His Uncle Joe stuck by Krzyzewski. When you would show up at his house, he would say, "Son, what's your name?" And you had to say Krzyzewski. He remembers being 5 or 6 and pulling up to the house and walking up and turning to his mother and saying, "Mom, what's my name?" And so, you know, you go from someone who literally is on the stoop of a relative's house asking his mother what his name is to now having that name be almost a stand-in for excellence. I mean, that's a hell of a long journey. And, you know, Mike is very aware of that. You know, when his father died, his tombstone that the military paid for said William Cross. And then when Mike's mother died, Mike and his brother, Bill, got rid of the old tombstone that said Cross and replaced it with one that said Krzyzewski.
I didn't get a chance for interaction with my dad. I'd always heard your dad's proud of you. But my dad never came up to me and says, "You know, son, I'm proud of you." That's the way it was.
So his dad, Bill Cross, a.k.a. William Krzyzewski, what was he like, right? What was his deal?
So his dad was an elevator operator at the Willoughby Tower in downtown Chicago. And then his dad was always trying stuff. You know, he really wanted a different kind of life that never seemed to quite work out. You know, he ran a bar called the Cross Tap, and he had a restaurant. And, you know, he tried all sorts of things. What he wanted for his son was a respectable American life.
Yeah, respectable meaning something like what a young Mike Krzyzewski actually wound up doing, which was get accepted into the military academy at West Point, where, you know, you become the captain of the Army basketball team and an officer.
You know, he got this appointment to West Point and didn't want to take it. And his parents were just like, his dad couldn't believe that his son wasn't going to take a free college education at a place that produced U.S. presidents and be an officer and a gentleman. He resigned his commission to go work for Bobby Knight. That was turning his back on everything his father had ever wanted for him.
You say, right, in your piece, that of all of these figures in Coach K's life, his mom, who died in 1996,
yeah,
is the one who means the most to him. Of all of these sort of father figures that he's collected, why was that? What was their relationship like?
She was incredible. You know, eighth grade education, funny, hardworking. You know, if you've ever stayed at the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel in Chicago, she used to clean the Chicago Athletic Association. She was a cleaning lady. She used to tell Mike, I chase dirt. Nobody's better at it than me.
She was always on my side. She gave me unconditional support, unfailing love. As a result of my relationship with her, I was never afraid to lose.
Every Duke team has heard the story of when she was a little older, somebody tried to snatch her purse.
She got off the CTA bus in Chicago, and some kids knocked her over, and they grabbed at her purse, and she didn't let it go. And finally, they left. And afterwards, my brother and I, you know, they could have beaten up. He said, Mike, it's my purse. Didn't belong to them.
He would go to Chicago and would go be recruiting these players who were now household names. And instead of taking the Duke credit card and staying at the Four Seasons, he would go and just crash with his mom. And he'd wake up and she'd have ironed all his clothes, including like his underwear. You know, he has her rosary in his left pocket at every game. You know, I talked to Steve Wojciechowski, who said he just remembers really tense games where he would hear Mike whispering like the word Emily, and he would be praying to his mother. So she is very much with him in the sort of last weeks of this thing.
So it seems, right, like Coach K's interior spiritual sort of monologue, his interior life, got shaped clearly by his mom. But you also wrote about a Catholic priest, someone I didn't know anything about, named Father Francis Roche. What did this priest do to shape Coach K into the type of authority figure that he ended up being?
Well, you know, he was a geometry teacher at Archbishop Weber High School in Chicago, taught Mike, was a real mentor. And then they kept in touch. He did Mike's mother's funeral and his brother's funeral. I asked Coach's daughter, Debbie, what she thought Coach K got from Father Roche. And her answer was permission. Permission to live his faith in a way that felt natural to him. The nuns and the priests do a number on you because Coach K walks through the world with tremendous guilt about all sorts of things.
Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't ever go away. The person we know as Coach K feels like that person was always in there And it wasn't so much like he was created, but that, you know, Father Roach was one of the people who gave that person permission to just be.
Yes, permission to be the guy on the bench screaming obscenities at players and officials. Which brings us also to the most towering and controversial father figure in Coach K's life. And that's why I have a lot of questions about Bobby Knight after the break.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Right, I am fascinated, admittedly, by Coach K's relationship with the legendarily successful and infamously unhinged Bob Knight, who is the Hall of Fame coach who won 3 national titles and a zillion games coaching at Indiana, because Coach K once fashioned himself in Bobby Knight's image, right? I mean, you could see the resemblance at times from afar, from all the trophies to his thin skin dealing with the press. But how much of the general do you really see in Krzyzewski today?
You know, there's not a lot that's immediately visible anymore. That being said, I've never been on his team and made a dumb mental error. So, you know, there's an aspect of him that I won't ever see. He played for Bob Knight at Army, and then his first job was an assistant for Bob Knight. He was an assistant at Indiana, and then he was a head coach at Army. But I find it interesting that, you know, Bob Knight was a guy who was never in the military, who called himself the general, and Mike Krzyzewski was an actual captain in the United States Army who doesn't call himself the captain.
That's right. He goes, you know, like coach. Yeah.
Bob Knight was Coach K's mentor, and he was his college coach and drove them unspeakably hard, yelling at guys who would later become actual war heroes in Vietnam.
At West Point.
Yeah, this is, you know, he was the coach at West Point. There was a moment where Bob Knight was the epitome of everything that was right about college basketball. And then he just single-handedly burned everything he'd built to the ground out of anger and insecurity and fear and paranoia.
Looky here, looky here. Bobby Knight just threw his chair clear across the free throw lane.
If Alford wants to sit down and talk to me instead of holding press conferences about a lot of bullshit, I'll be glad to sit down and talk to him.
I'm tired of losing to Purdue. I'm not here to around this week. Now you may be, but I'm not.
Bob Knight would not mention the broadcast report where former players accused Knight of physical and mental abuse.
Every great coach in every sport has those impulses in them to be selfish, to be full of rage, to be full of, you know, I mean, every ambition and ego. Everybody has it. You know, I think if you talk to guys who played for him in the 80s, they could say, you could almost see the wheels turning. Like, what would Bob Knight do? Coach K had a similar rise. And then instead of burning it all down, he didn't become the worst version of himself. He somehow became the best version of himself and kept rising.
Well, it seems like Coach K watched Bob Knight, who again was the best coach we had ever seen. It feels like he may have watched him become consumed by the rage that Bob Knight believed was responsible for all of that greatness.
Or, I mean, even more to the point, he felt himself bear the brunt of it. In my reporting, people tell me about the letter. In the 1992 Final Four, Bob Knight in Indiana lost to Coach K and Duke.
Meet the
will play Monday night for back-to-back national championships.
And, you know, you can see on the video, you know, Bob Knight barely does the handshake, you know. And then he has someone, a mutual friend of theirs, deliver just this unbelievable letter. And it just really knocks Coach K for a loop.
I mean, in your piece, right, you called it a blistering letter threatening Mike with an end of their relationship, just venom pouring off the page.
This is a guy for whom relationships are everything. You know, Bob Knight was his coach in 1969 when his father died. Bob Knight came to Chicago for the funeral. He sat in their family home at their kitchen table. You know, the fact that this kind of person who had been that in your life was capable of something like this, you know, from talking to people, you know, multiple people who were in the room, was deeply unmooring. And, you know, finally, Mike Bray, who's now the coach at Notre Dame, stands up in this room and just looks at him and goes, Bob Knight. And it was funny. I called, somebody told me that, and I called Mike Bray, and I'm like, hey, I just need to know if this is accurate. And he was like, yeah, that's what I said.
But this is, I mean, but you're disentangling like a Game of Thronesian family drama, right? You're talking about a father figure who is then becoming divorced from his son, and here comes, I don't know, a grandnephew to say, F you.
You know, there was a break. And, you know, the break was after Coach K had two national titles. And
the student had become the master.
You know, when I asked him about him, you know, he sort of sighed and said, it's complicated. And then the thing he said, I thought it was interesting because, no offense, Coach, if you're listening, but you were dodging it a little. But the place you went to, I thought was fascinating. The place he went to was, he talked about how his mother had always told him to not let yourself be driven by sort of hate and anger. And he's like, you know, my mom never had that ever, a day in her life. And she lived it. And he said, you know, I've made a conscious effort to strip those things from how I do this. It is an interesting world in which potentially Bob Knight's greatest contribution to the sport of college basketball was treating people so poorly that he showed Mike Krzyzewski how not to treat people. That in some ways, the longevity of Coach K, and frankly, the fact that he has reached the end of this journey with most of his important relationships intact and has not been asterisked, is that flows from his wife, Mickey, and his daughters, but it also has to flow from he had this mentor who showed him many good things, but also held a mirror up and showed him what not to be.
But to be blunt, right, that obviously doesn't mean that this almost inhuman intensity isn't still there. Because there are all these war stories you have deliberately collected from his former players that almost proudly make that point.
Interesting moment, an unusual eruption of anger from Mike Krzyzewski. You see the Cameron Crazies chanting at the pit bench, and then Coach K yelling, shut up, shut up. And he walked across the court as time expired on the first half.
And there goes the jacket. You don't see a jacket get thrown very often with a 23-point lead. Took his jacket off and rifled that jacket into the bench. Wow.
Got a tee on him.
This is at the end of the timeout. Mike Krzyzewski turning and firing the pan or the marker down towards his bench, and now look to the left.
Oh, yeah, it's just hilarious. And, you know, they all are like, you know, that J.J. Redick on his podcast, he had somebody on the other day.
Player, Jason Tatum, yeah.
It was Jason Tatum. That's right.
Coach, or one of the assistants, sent out a mass text and was like, everybody come to Coach K house right now. We all sit down. And he literally goes down the line and tells all of us about ourselves. And he basically told me that, you know, I should just leave, commit for the draft now. Like, I don't want to be here. All you care about is the NBA. We try to go to the locker room and there's a code. And the code has been changed. So essentially we're locked out the locker room and we go practice and there's a pile of white t-shirts and these navy blue shorts. And we damn near played football for 2.5 hours, diving on the floor, hitting each other. We couldn't use our showers. We had to shower back at our room. And the freshmen had to wash all the t-shirts and shorts for like the next 3 days.
There's some PTSD there. Yeah, just bringing back all the memories.
You could just sort of feel JJ shiver. And he's like, that gives me PTSD.
Well, it feels right like all of these guys, at the very least, made peace with the fact that this man they would regard as the ultimate leader also was going to parent them in certain ways.
Well, and just, you know, this was an immersive experience. You were going to be, for however long you were there, part of his family. With all the good and bad that can entail.
Correct.
You know, I mean, like...
It's not for everybody, clearly.
No, and what was so interesting is, you know, I started off with the idea that, like, this is just this is the Apple of basketball. And it just isn't.
Like a well-run corporation that has figured stuff out that others have not.
No, it is not that at all. It is almost, in a very beautiful way, the opposite of that. And in fact, it being the opposite of that is probably, like, at a base level, the root cause of why it's been so successful.
Well, you mentioned the self-awareness that Coach K has worked to develop around his entire aura, his level of intimidation. It does feel like he goes into, when he's coaching, a particular frame of mind that you have diagnosed as its own, like, entity.
Well, and by the way, I didn't diagnose it. He calls it battle mode. And, you know, he is a 1969 graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. So he is allowed to make sports war metaphors. And, you know, he calls it battle mode. You know, he's not sleeping like he should. He's not eating like he should. He doesn't want to talk about anything other than either the last game or the next one. And, you know, as one of his former players said, he really thinks battle mode is the reason they win and have won.
What does that look and sound like, even for people who have not had the terrifying pleasure of being around him up close? What is it like to be in this sort of a foxhole, to push the metaphor, with Coach K?
Well, you know, he didn't coach the second half of this most recent Wake Forest game. Was feeling dizzy and lightheaded. They gave him an IV in the locker room. Couldn't come out. You know, his blood pressure was up.
Yeah, his assistant coach, John Shire, discussed this whole scene after the game.
We went back to halftime, and clearly Coach wasn't himself. He wasn't right. And so just told the team, it's, you know, he needs to focus on taking care of him, and we need to step up and come out in the second half and do what we need to do.
And then they turned the game on, and then his blood pressure went up more.
Carroll with 5-4, 3-2. Paulo on the drive, off the window, no. Tap dunk! Good for Williams, but they're going to wave it off! And call basket interference! You can review that with 0.2 seconds to go.
And they better.
And he was watching it on TV, screaming at the officials.
The Hearts inside Cameron skipped a beat or three as that hit the backboard, the front of the rim, and out. And just like that, the Blue Devils survive.
So I saw him 2 days after that, and he was very honest and very vulnerable and was just sort of shrugged and was like, I'm 75, you know, and I think he only knows one way to do this. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a way in which he could have coasted this year if he didn't feel up to it. And that was cool to be around, to just, you know, just as a human being in the world, it's inspiring. This is how you end something like this.
Yeah, Coach K is clearly still fighting, right? He's clearly still in battle mode. But I want to find out what retirement mode might possibly look like for him and for Duke after the break.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, this is where we talk about the news about who is going to take over for Coach K. Because that is a story that is its own family drama in and of itself, right? Because our former colleague Ian O'Connor has a book about Coach K, a biography of the man, that had some news in it.
It's interesting that, you know, in his book, he talked about how Tommy Amaker was offered the job and that Coach K had to talk him into turning it down.
Tommy Amaker, who played point guard for Coach K, is now the coach at Harvard.
And, you know, now, and then, you know, John Shire was then offered the job and accepted. This is obviously more complicated than the headlines. It is very interesting. I mean, there's a real bristling around Coach K at the idea that he wanted control after he was gone. And yet, you know, in my story, I quote a source who's close to both of them.
To Amaker and to Coach K.
Yes, that Ian's reporting was accurate. You know, Coach K told me that it was a cheap shot, and I don't think he means Ian. I think he means, like, sort of the anonymous parsing of his actions. This is clearly people who are used to operating in private. and it never, like, I was just like, you know, the idea that this wasn't going to get out is a little nuts.
This is like if the royal family of England had never experienced, like, royals watching before, and suddenly all these tabloids just dropped on them.
Yeah, and so I don't fully understand exactly what went down. It's clear there are hurt feelings. It's clear there are, frankly, a lot of people who probably wanted this job and thought that they would do a great job at it. It is very interesting that it really hit him in his Catholic guilty place when all this broke, the idea that he had hurt Tommy. You know, his daughter Debbie said that he's in his office after the news breaks about, you know, Shire and Amaker, and he's just feeling raw and emotional and tells his daughter, you know, I just want to take care of everybody. And she's like, Dad, you are. And, you know, she can almost read his mind that, like, I want to be able to take care of people in a month when this is over.
I mean, the headline, right? The headline suggested that Coach K had hijacked the search committee for his replacement and ousted Tommy Amaker from having that place in the line of succession.
He was just in a real spiral about it. And it's my understanding that they have now talked. To me, the largest takeaway is that it is a big, messy family with a lot of, you know, powerful, smart, alpha people. And, you know, the fact that, I don't know the right way to say this, but I mean, the fact that everybody doesn't hate each other is a miracle. The fact that everybody mostly likes and loves each other is stunning.
You also document, right, how the season itself this year has been something of a mess, right? Like, this has been a roller coaster. Duke hasn't always fulfilled their potential on the floor. But then there was this particular game where Coach K apparently thought that they did actually turn a corner. How did that play out?
You know, the game where they went to Virginia.
We are ready now for the tip. Virginia in white, Duke in blue, and away we go.
You know, Virginia is just a nightmare to play. They're so well coached, and, you know, what they do what they do so precisely and well that it exposes talented teams who haven't done the work to be ready for it.
Griffin into the paint. Can't get it to go. Virginia ball as Franklin rips it away from him.
Coach K felt like they were ready for it and that when the game got tough, they rallied.
And it'll end with Duke beating Virginia 65-61.
And his explanation was, it was because you felt that this game was yours. And when it got tough, you weren't going to let them take it from you, because you don't let somebody take something that is already yours, going back to his mom in the purse. He goes, that's different than winning.
Let me add one thing. This is our 28th game, so it was our 28th preparation. I thought the maturity of our team in preparing went to a different level. They're getting it.
He was very giddy coming into his office after that. He slept for 4 hours and came into the office and was giddy. It was like, this looks like an old Duke team. This looks like a machine. And he goes, and I haven't felt that in a very long time. And who knows what happens next, but he thinks that they have what it takes.
But speaking of having what it takes, right, to do the job, I do think it's telling that despite writing like 10,000 or so words on this man, he did not give you a lot of time to sit down and interview him. But what he did do, apparently, was interview you, because he invited you to be a guest on his podcast, Basketball and Beyond with Coach K. So what was that like?
I felt like it was some sort of head game in a way that I didn't fully understand what was going on.
John Jackson, who I work with, said, we've been approached by ESPN. He said, this guy's really a good writer and really interesting. And so really, I don't feel like you've been stalking me, but
well, good.
Yeah, you've been stalking my best friend, Mo.
Well, I have spent a considerable amount of time with Mo. Mo's the best.
Whenever he's here for a Saturday game, I go to 7:45 Mass, and I usually leave after I have communion.
Just to sort of, yeah.
No, I'm in the back. I get the final blessing, but then I'm out. Mo doesn't follow me. So he's still there with everyone, and Father Jacek says at the end, anybody's birthday, and somebody raises their hand. Do we have any visitors?
Oh, well, the most dangerous place in the world is between Mo and a microphone.
Yeah, so, and all of a sudden I hear, yeah, we're from, and I look, it's Mo and the Columbos.
Talking in your church
yes,
service.
But he goes one step further.
Please tell me he talked to him in Polish.
He did. Unbelievable.
And so what does, if we were to zoom out here at the very end, right, what does the departure, the retirement of Mike Krzyzewski signal about the end of a very, very, very long era for this sport?
I mean, the thing I kept thinking about is, this is a guy who was in the Army. His brother was a big union guy and a firefighter. Coach K is one of the last, still public-facing members of that generation. Basketball's changing dramatically, and he talks about that a lot. And, I think the way that bonds are formed between coaches and players might be different in the NIL era. But, I mean, I also think that if he were 55 years old, he'd sure as hell be figuring it out. I don't think that this is somehow beyond him. So, I mean, I think there have always been, every generation, a couple of guys like him across all sports. And, there certainly will be those in the future. But it is rare that you see one of those careers end like this. And it's a cool thing. We get to turn on our TV and actually watch this. I can't wait to see what John Shire does next year, because, I wonder how long it'll take it before the thing starts to feel like John. And I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how that works. I do know that, so Coach K's office is on the sixth floor. The rest of the basketball offices are on the fifth floor. But if you walk out of his office and take a right and then an immediate right, you sort of go down a back stairway to the fifth floor. They're redoing the fifth floor so that John Shire has his big fancy head coach's office. They're bricking up that stairwell. They have to do it because of the design, but I just love the metaphor. Coach K can't go from the sixth floor down to the fifth floor like that anymore. He's got to take the elevator like everybody else. I think it'll be interesting to see what he does when you know, somebody else suddenly gets to paint on the portrait of himself that's hanging over there across town.
Right. That's something that you do when you are both renovating a place and when you want to make sure that the previous resident actually can't give in to temptations.
No, man, you got to take his keys away.
I'm going to miss it. Being in camera and for those big games.
The whistle backs it out at the buzzer!
What a shot!
He hit it!
Are you serious?
How lucky can you be?
Wright Thompson, as always, thanks for doing this, man.
Man, my pleasure. Anytime.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you Monday.